Clark this time plays it very elegantly out to the deep cover boundary, and that is his 100. A fine knock this from Joe Clark. He scored a century in the first innings, and he's backed it up, 103 not out.
Here he is looking for his century, and that is going to be it. That's clipped square of the wicket, punches the air at the far end. A wonderful innings that from Joe Clark.
This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and if the last couple of episodes of the podcast have been mostly concerned with beginnings, the start of a new pre-season and the beginning of new careers at Trent Bridge for the likes of Haseeb Hameed and Mohammed Abbas, then this one's got more of an end-of-term feeling. Joe Clark and Kevin Shine are my guests this week, and after Ben Stokes won this year's BBC Sports Personality of the Year award, Clark recalled where he was when that Ashes test was won. He was at the crease at Trent Bridge.
I think I plinked a two there and
got a huge reception.
Biggest cheering of the day. I was thinking, what's going on here? And yeah, I think someone who's picking up BBC Sports Personality of the Year just shows how far he's come, and you know, he deserves it in my opinion.
Also on the podcast, there's a surprising answer from Kevin Shine as we find out his Christmas favourites. Favourite Christmas food?
Pickled onions.
Pickled onions aren't a Christmas food.
Yes, they are. You cut them up and you have a bit of turkey, a bit of ham, and you get pickled onion and maybe a gherkin on the same fork. It's amazing. It's a great taste. It's an unbelievable combination. That's thrown you, isn't it?
And as Peter Trago becomes the latest player to sign up for Notts in 2020, head coach Peter Moores shared more on what the all-rounder had to offer.
He gives us very much an all-round player, batter, bowler, fielder, but he offered another layer, I think, of being able to be there for some of our younger players that look across that dressing room and think, oh, OK, here's somebody I'll get decent advice from, a decent view, who's on the field with me, who can share some of that experience.
But first, it just wouldn't be the festive period without pulling a few Christmas crackers. And like all the best things at this time of year, things didn't exactly go to plan.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, come on.
Well, there we go.
Good technique, well done.
We might as well, let's have a look at the jokes. There might be something decent in here. You never know. Oh, this one is awful. What do snowmen like to do on a weekend?
No
chill
idea.
Out.
No, nice.
Yeah, that's similar to mine. How do snowmen get around?
Yeah.
By icicle.
It's not doing it.
There is actually no joke on this one.
Well,
I'm looking at the puzzle thing.
Crackers have gone severely down the pan. Although I did quite enjoy your sort of old Lang Syne style, let's all do them at once and cross arms thing.
I guessed at that.
Is that a Shine family tradition, or is that the first?
I think I got mixed up between Christmas and New Year there.
is there a bit of an almost end of term feeling starting to come in, do you think, now? A couple of days as we record this until breaking up for the Christmas break?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, The Christmas do for all the staff and players Friday, I think that's something that all the players look forward to when we first come back in. I think we almost think, you know, let's work as hard as we can for the next sort of 4 or 5 weeks and then enjoy, you know, sort of celebrating what we've done with each other as a group come Friday, and then everyone obviously will go off and spend their festive period with their friends and family. So yeah, it's a nice period.
Have you found the first few weeks as part of the setup?
Absolutely loved it. It's been fantastic. It's been a bit of a dream come true. I'm normally away at this time of year, so to actually be at home, because I live near Southwell, to be at home around Christmas has been fantastic. But to be part of something new as well, because I've been out of county cricket for 14 years now, and to get a chance to work with this group of staff and players is an absolute privilege, and I can't believe how lucky I am.
How's that been sort of different for you? So I know it's only been a couple of weeks, but to be working day in, day out with the guys rather than at ECB level, how's that been?
So I obviously played county cricket. I coached it for Somerset, so I know county cricket, but it has changed. The intensity has gone up. So when I was coaching Somerset, we were just starting to go into 12-month contracts. But it wasn't done as comprehensively as this. And what's really interesting is the amount of detail that they're going into this year. Obviously, it was a tough year last year for Notts, and they're a very, very talented side. And they've all looked at that and thought, well, we've got to do something about it. And I've seen a huge amount of determination, some brilliant planning from all the staff. So I've come in while this is all happening. It's been really, really good to watch.
Tough year last year, but a tough start to pre-season it's been looking like as well. I think the last thing I really saw properly was the Watt Bike thing. Was that last week? The sort of Watt Bike challenge in a room that looked no bigger than this with about a dozen of you in there. Were you both on that last week?
We were.
Yeah.
How was that? It looked tough.
Where did you come, Clarkie?
I finished off last, yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
If I'd have known, I wouldn't have asked.
I mean, look, me and Matt Carter, we decided, you know, we were in it together.
You went out of the blocks quite quickly, didn't you?
Yeah, started off. I think he was worried, really, because he had his dog there and he was rushing for it. And then I jumped on. I slowed us down, but, you know, all of us. I think the good thing was we had staff doing it as well, like yourself and Frank C. So it was a big team effort, and I think that's what we want to do, really. If we're doing tough activities, you know, we've done Goatham Hills.
Yeah.
I don't know if I pronounced that wrong. I think it's, you know, that's something that we want to do. Everyone's, you know, putting 100% in, and it's a real team sort of bond going into that, and everyone's working hard for each other and pulling everyone through. So yeah, it's worth the. I know it was tough, wasn't it? But it's worth it in the end.
Even the merest mention of Goatham Hills, I saw you sort of almost wincing again. Then was that a real tough day?
And well, Matt, I quite enjoyed fitness, but we didn't actually get involved in that. We've got involved. The staff have got involved in everything else because, you know, we're all in this together. But that was one that, you know, they wanted the players to do, and it was absolutely brutal. And it went on and on, and it was brilliant to watch from my point of view, because obviously I'm getting used to the players, not just the fast bowlers. I want to see all of the players, and it was great to see them actually grow as the whole. It was about 2.5 hours in the end, wasn't it? And it was sort of event after event after event, and to say that some of the lads were in a bit of trouble up there because of the effort they put in, not because they weren't fit, but because of the effort they were putting in, and that's what they wanted. It was probably one of the more brutal things I've seen in cricket in my time.
Matt Carter's dog is becoming almost like an extra host to this podcast as well. Moll mentioned him, I think, in the first week. He's coming up quite a bit. Is he becoming team mascot almost at this rate?
I don't think so.
It's a strange looking thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Ovi.
Ovi.
I think it comes after someone from Love Island in the summer.
Oh, right.
There's a guy called Ovi. Well, you'll have to ask. I don't know if I'm wrong there, but I mean, I'm done with the dog. I was having my dinner maybe last week, a couple of weeks ago, and he decided to take a number two in there. So
not a lunchtime.
It's not. It's a small, cute looking thing in it. But I haven't seen him this week, actually. Don't know where he's been.
No, yeah. I haven't seen him. It's interesting, isn't it? I've got a black Labrador called John. And
I love the name John for a dog, by the way. I like the idea of like a real person's name for a dog.
His name is John the dog. So he's got a middle name and then name. So he was named by my two sons when they were very young. So it was a good call, that.
Do you shout John the dog across the field?
Sometimes, or just a straight John, and probably two or three people look around at you as well, which is great.
It's an odd one, that, isn't it?
But they do say that dogs look like their owners. Now, I reckon I've got a bit of Labrador in me, but when you look at Karts' dog, I mean, it is a strange looking thing. It is like something from outer space. It is,
you're saying,
unusual.
This, not me.
He's such a big lad. He's, you know, having a very small dog.
It's tiny, isn't it? It's like in your hands.
Yeah. I saw he was in the lift in Radcliffe Road the other day. It was barely coming up to his heels. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The size
he's
difference.
Got size, what, 13 shoes. So I think they're bigger than a dog.
It's unreal.
Ridiculously cute.
I'd like to see John come in. I don't know if that can be made to happen, but I think John
should. He's getting a bit old now. He's 12 or 13. He's getting a bit creaky, but
fair enough.
Love to come.
Fair enough. Elsewhere in sort of the world of cricket this week, I suppose, it's been big news on the front pages and the back pages again, in a way that you don't always see in the winter. The sports personality thing's brought it all back round. Ben Stokes, the whole England team winning team of the year. I think I spoke to you, Joe, after it was the day that Stokes did his Headingley innings, and there was a T20 game on down here, and you would have been out on the field while the cheer went around Trent Bridge, I suppose.
Yeah.
To hear that he'd won the Ashes test. Must have been quite a surreal sort of atmosphere to have played in.
Well, yeah, I think I plinked a two there and
got a huge reception.
Biggest cheer of the day. I was thinking, what's going on here? And when I went out, when we started, I mean, they were, must have been 7-8 down, and you thought there was no hope. I can't remember who was umpiring, but I said, what's that? You know, what they're cheering for? And he said, they need one to win or three to win. And it was, I couldn't believe it. But obviously, I didn't watch it live. But I think a few of the boys were watching it in the change rooms. And yeah, I think someone who's almost turned his opinion in the public around massively. You know, 18 months ago, he was a villain in English sport, really, after the incident that he was involved in. And you know, he's come away and obviously probably learnt a lot from that, and let his cricket do the talking. And now, you know, picking up BBC, you know, Sports Personality of the Year just shows how far he's come, and yeah, he deserves it in my opinion.
It was a real sort of where were you moment. I mean, where were you, Kevin?
I was actually surfing. In Devon, Saunton Sands, when they were 7 down. I thought, well, that's it. I was listening to it on the radio, and I took my surfboard and wandered out, and I was probably surfing for another hour and a half, walked back in, and the beach, the whole beach, it was a beautiful day, the beach was going mad. I thought, what is going on here? Got back up, they needed 15 more runs to win, which was absolutely incredible. And just sat on Saunton Sands beach with everybody listening on the beach was amazing, and the cheer that went up from there was fantastic.
Have you both noticed a bit of a change there this summer? I suppose I've noticed it with my mates who aren't into cricket have started asking me about the game again, and they haven't done that for years and years. Is that something that's come through to you as well?
Yeah, I've seen people on stag do's dressed as Ben Stokes and Jack Leach. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? You know, that wouldn't have been.
Same things happened to you this summer, I suppose. Have you heard more people talking about the game?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be very close to it. So we would obviously going around trying to support all of the players and the sort of fringe players, make sure they were ready to go. So you were very much involved, and it was, you know, all the anticipation everywhere you went was fantastic. I mean, I thought it was great as well. You saw so much of other sports as well. Looking at cricket, you had the pictures of the England rugby team playing cricket for warm ups. Yeah. Everyone asked, "Well, the footballers play cricket for what?" Actually, rugby players do.
Yeah,
and you know that was amazing. It seemed to bring the whole country together.
I suppose the likes of Stokes and Leach are going to go on to be the sort of the next generation's sporting heroes. I mean, I always like to see a cricketer in glasses. It's always a nice touch. But something I've been asking everyone I've had on the podcast so far in the last couple of weeks is about who it was that sort of inspired them to get into the game. So far, it's exclusively been Freddie Flintoff, that Stephen Mullaney, Jake Ball, Fletch, they all sort of credited him. But whether it's a player or whether it's like your dad or your brother, who was it, Joe, I suppose, that made you first think, yeah, cricket's a thing for me?
I think the 2005 Ashes was what, you know, I didn't know what cricket was. I was massively into my football, and, you know, never touched a cricket bat, never touched a cricket ball. And then you saw that on the TV and you saw the people getting around cricket and more people talking about cricket. So it became something that I was like, okay, what's cricket? And that was it. You know, that 2005 England team, Australian team, that series was incredible to watch, and from there, that's when, you know, the love of the game started for me.
Kevin, I suppose, who was it for you that sort of sparked your interest?
Can you guess that I'm a little bit older than Clarkie?
I'm guessing it's not going to be Freddie Flintoff this time.
What you say here. So the obvious one would have been Ian Botham, obviously, when I was growing up, and Bob Willis, obviously, really sad news about him, obviously, and just watching him and, you know, how he went about his business was great. And, you know, then whatever cricket was on TV, it was the old Cornhill tests then, you know, watching Dennis Lilly. I was always drawn towards the bowlers, to be fair, even though, funnily enough, I was an all-rounder at that time, Clarkie, can you guess that? But I always loved watching the sort of theatre of fast bowlers. So you Dennis Lilly's, Michael Holdings, all those great West Indians, and then lucky enough to play at Hampshire where Malcolm Marshall was the overseas player when I went in as a 17-year-old. So that was the stuff that dreams were made of. It was great to watch. And I suppose that when I was younger, you didn't see so much on TV, but what you saw just stuck in your head, and you went out and just tried to emulate everyone, really.
How was Malcolm Marshall to have in that team, coming in as a 17-year-old and someone like that being there?
He was the nicest man I've ever met. So there were two West Indians at that point who were overseas players, Gordon Greenidge and Malcolm Marshall. And they made me feel so welcome. I was a Reading boy, and Gordon Greenidge was from Reading originally, obviously from Barbados, and Malcolm was too. But they were so nice. I was totally in awe of them. And Malcolm sort of took me under his wing as a mad young fast bowler, tried to refine me, probably failed at the beginning because I was absolutely mad. But I remembered everything he said later on.
Yeah.
In my career, it was too late then, but I remembered it, and it was brilliant. But standing next to him at mid-off watching him bowl was amazing. I've never seen a bowler with that much skill, and be able to bowl fast as well. So I count myself very privileged to have just been playing in that era, really.
Yeah, doesn't get much better in terms of player than that, does it, really?
That's, not for that's a young about, fast bowler.
That's get, about as good as it gets. Yeah. Now, there's been another new arrival at Trent Bridge this week in the shape of former Somerset all-rounder Peter Trago. Trago's joined the club on a two-year deal, and according to head coach Peter Moores, he's got much to offer both as a player and a mentor to some of the younger outlaws.
Well, we signed Peter as an all-round package. I mean, Pete is a man who's played... He's played 20 years of professional cricket. He's got a very strong reputation as a player, but how he goes about his cricket is also very strong. So, you know, I sat down and talked to Pete for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, really, about his passion to carry on playing and to offer something back into the game. So he gives us very much an all-round player, batter, bowler, fielder. But he'll offer another layer, I think, of being able to be there for some of our younger players. We've lost a lot of experience out of that dressing room. So players that look across that dressing room and think, oh, OK, here's somebody I'll get decent advice from, a decent view, who's on the field with me, who can share some of that experience. I think Pete's going to bring that to us in any format of the game. So he's an exciting sign, and I think to give a bit better balance to our squad across all three formats, but also in age and experience as we go through.
What sort of frame of mind did the lads come back in after a difficult 2019 season? How were they when they came back day one?
Interesting. I think everybody went through their own reflections. For me, I found that 6 weeks probably as tough as any time in the season, if I'm honest. I think the first job I think that I certainly wanted to do with the players was to revisit a little bit of what had happened and to really try and make sure that out of that, out of some of the performances, and it's quite painful at times to go through those performances, and you know, we understand the members wanted to play better cricket and we didn't in the Red Bull. You've got to go back and look honestly, okay, what did happen? What are we going to do about it? And what we got over the next sort of 5 months are we going to do to try and put some of those things right?
Has that sort of honesty since you came back helped the group to sort of stay united, if you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, one of the areas we had to accept was we got a lot of new players. You know, I think over the last 2 to 3 years there's been such a movement in players. So the first thing, one of the things that came out was we've got to really work very hard to get to know each other better. So we had sort of three threads. One, to get to know each other better. Two, to get for the new players to really connect to what the club's about. What are you playing for that's just more than a game of cricket? And I think when you start to have a look at the club, the history of the club, the people that come and watch, the members, some of the great players that have represented it, you start to get an understanding of the importance, and it's our moment in time. You know, each era has its chance to make an impact on the club. This group of players will get their opportunity. It started with a really tough season in many ways, from lots and lots of reasons, that we've got to use that adversity to be able to come back for next year to really start to show the sort of cricket I think some of these young players can play.
That's Peter Moores speaking to me earlier this week, and you'll be able to watch a full in-depth interview with the head coach in the coming days at trentbridge.co.uk. Now, obviously, it's a cricket podcast, but it is sort of a Christmas special podcast as well. That's why we went literally across the road to get some terrible crackers about 10 minutes ago. But I want to sort of talk a little bit about your Christmases as well. I'm going to do a sort of quick-fire Christmas thing. 30 seconds. No thinking about it. I'm just going to throw Christmas things at you. Whatever your answer is, that's what we do. We move on. We've done Christmas. That's it. So, Joe Clark, 30 seconds. Favourite Christmas food?
Pigs in blankets.
Do you get involved in cooking the turkey?
No.
Favourite Christmas song?
The Pogues.
Any Christmas songs you really don't like?
No. No. Favourite
Christmas film?
Home Alone.
Does Die Hard count as a Christmas film?
No.
Ooh, that is controversial for me. And does New Year top Christmas for you, or is it all about Christmas?
All about Christmas for me.
Kevin, we'll go again. You've had time to prepare, really, because I'm not going to think of other questions.
I'm
going
to lie to you.
I can't think of other things.
You did brilliantly there, Clarky. I'll be going.
So, favourite Christmas food?
Pickled onions.
Oh, wow. Well, hang on, I know it's meant to be 30 seconds, but pickled onions aren't a Christmas food.
Yes, they are. You cut them up and you have a bit of turkey, a bit of ham, and your pickled onion and maybe a gherkin on the same fork. It's amazing. It's a great taste. It's an unbelievable combination. That's thrown you, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's thrown me as well. I wasn't expecting that to come out.
I was sort
homemade
of...
pickled onions. Sorry, my dad.
Homemade
my
pickled
dad
onions.
Used to make the pickled onions with all these spices and stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing things. And I love them. It's just such a Christmas thing. It was all when he was cooking the vinegar, because you have to cook the vinegar first and then put the pickled onions in for about 4 weeks. So I knew Christmas was starting at the end of November because Dad was doing the pickled onions.
Wow.
I am old, remember that.
You had to pickle your own onions in those days. It was a different time. I mean,
you know, they weren't Haywards.
I was disgusted at first.
Joe Shine's pickled onions, they were magnificent.
But I'm going to be trying that, aren't I? Christmas time.
That's 30 seconds, we're done.
That is 30 seconds. I'm going to ask you your favourite Christmas film and your favourite Christmas
song
as well. Die Hard.
And it is a Christmas film.
That is exactly right. It won't be set at Christmas, otherwise it's not an accident.
I've watched it twice so far already this Christmas.
Dead right. And favourite Christmas song?
Chris Rea. Driving Home for Christmas, something about it.
Excellent choice, I like that.
Driving to Middlesbrough.
Me and Joe were at the Trembridge Trust's Christmas lunch yesterday, forget-me-nots, and there was one question, there was a one-question quiz, and it was, where was Chris Rea driving to?
He was driving home.
He was driving to Middlesbrough.
Was he?
Yeah.
But I don't think
so, yeah.
I don't think that's in the song.
No, I didn't hear that.
Well, it's been fun. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Kevin, for popping in. Hope you both enjoy your Christmas break. And we'll be back with a podcast as well in the new year. And you can find plenty more behind-the-scenes content at trentbridge.co.uk.